Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Forever Bristol City podcast, going out live and being recorded on Saturday evening at 6 o'clock. Joining me are our usual contributors, and anybody else, if you want to dial in or make your messages on the text feed, please do so. But joining me this evening in the studio are Ian, Les, and Greenan, aka Mark. I don't know what's happened there, Mark. Has your mic gone down? But anyway, we digress. What an afternoon, or what a lunchtime it was. The final score from the Cardiff City Stadium, I think it's that correct. The correct name was Cardiff City 1, Bristol City 2, second win away on the road for Nigel. And it was a bloody good performance. There's no doubt about that. I'll come to you first, Mark. Quick 30 seconds on the game, just a quick encapsulation as you saw it.
Andy Vyman showed his Forsbrand Dort technique twice to be the king of the road for City in a resilient performance, which between 59th and 64th minute, that they were wilt under the pressure of Cardiff's comeback. No chance. Another fantastic goal. Three great points on the road. They start winning at home.
Great stuff. Well, that's what we want. Les, your thoughts in a nutshell on the overall game?
Yeah, I thought it was our best performance of the season so far, and I think it was our best performance under Pearson. Finally, we're looking like a side with a real shape and a real resilience, who look like they've played together for a lot longer than they actually have. And Pearson at the moment is making players who were seemingly very average look much, much better. So, last game before the international break, and a real positive to go into that
definitely
week off.
Definitely. Ian, your thoughts in summary on the game?
Excellent away performance. Pearson got everything right in terms of matching Cardiff up with physicality when we got the ball down well. We played some decent football as well. But you have to earn the right to play. And today, we earned the right to play. With the increased physicality in the team, and everyone competed. And that was, for me, that was what generated the win. Okay, we had a little bit of good fortune with Andy King's back heel off the line in the first half, which could be my champagne moment of the season, as someone suggested on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I think that was the key, is that he got his shape and the personnel right to compete with Cardiff. And I hope he doesn't make any changes for the next game against Preston, who are now, after a terrible start, who are now going well.
Three in a row. They've won three in a row. Yeah, Les, you talked about shape. I mean, some would say he was playing Baker as a left back. I mean, I don't think so. If you look at that starting lineup, I mean, he dropped the two, I'll call them underperformers from the previous game, and that's maybe being a bit harsh, but that was Simpson and De Silva. They didn't make the starting lineup. But was it three at the back with wing backs, or how did you see it, the shape?
No, I thought it was four at the back, Baker at left back, but Pring's naturally a defensive player, isn't he? So it might have looked like a five at some points. But no, I thought it was obvious thing to do. De Silva has been targeted throughout the season so far by opposition sides, and against side like Cardiff, who are probably the most direct side in the league, he was always going to be the one who they were going to pick on. So it made sense to put Baker out there. When I saw the team, I couldn't really work out whether it was going to be a three or a four, but I think Masengo was playing on the right of a four in midfield, so I think it was like a 4-4-1-1, the kind of formation that he's been playing so far this season.
So he didn't deviate from what he knows, what he feels very comfortable with. No. Yeah. Ian, how did you see the shape of the side? I mean, it's pretty much what we were saying he should do earlier in the week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. From a personnel perspective, I think I put a couple of suggestions on Twitter, and one of them was exactly the team he picked in terms of the personnel. I think the way I describe it is fluid. When we were attacking, it was 4-4-2. At times, it looked like 4-3-3 when Masengo was closer to the middle. And at other times, it looked like three central defenders or five at the back. However you cut it, if you call it a back five just for a minute, Kalas was the shortest guy in there. for that. Yeah. And that can't have happened very often since he joined the club. And against a team like that, Les made a great point. This big diagonal that's been absolutely doing us didn't happen today.
No.
If it did happen, they were trying to win headers against Baker and Pring as opposed to Jada Silva and Callum O'Dowda. And that's the key thing. If you've got that amount of strength, you've got to compete against these teams physically, because otherwise, and we've seen it for seasons. Even some of the managers, I remember Gary Rowett at Millwall saying, "Oh yeah, well we're going down to Bristol.
Soft touch. We'll just beat soft touch. Up. Yeah,
and they did. You ain't going to beat that side up. No, I'll tell you that now.
No, Mark." Les said Pring is defensively minded, but he's got a pretty mean cross on him, and there was some great surging runs from him. And you know that left side, you know, with him in it and Baker as well, it's solid. There's not a lot going to get past that, is it? Really?
No, he's got some pace, and for a player that only made his debut, I think, against Reading, you wouldn't think it. You think he's a he's a seasoned championship player. He don't play with any fear at all. A bit like, you know, Alex Scott's been showing, and he'll win fouls. He looks to go forward, and that's the big difference between the sides this season. City looked to go forward, even when they conceded. They wanted to win the game.
Yeah,
and I was particularly impressed. A player I thought would be out of his comfort zone today, but Massengo, I thought, being shunted to the right, it might leave him out isolated, but he's a very intelligent player.
Yeah.
Came inside to take care of things. I think he was only left isolated once in the first half when the ball went past him. And I think there was an overload where the ball was dissected across, you know, a couple of crosses, and Cardiff had chances on the right. But apart from that, I mean, their throw-ins didn't really cause us any problems. That's what we were really worried about. Lots of throw-ins.
Yeah, I think they had three corners against. Yeah, I think they had three corners against our four. Ian, the game, as any local derby, it gets off to quite a sensitive, a tense affair. And City were really lucky early on when Moore broke through, and that was a great tackle. Certainly wasn't a foul. If the player had gone down, they might have appealed for one. But that was sort of one of the few things that Kiefer Moore did, wasn't it, really, when he broke through the middle early on. Good tackle by Baker.
It wasn't Moore. It wasn't Moore.
No, it was Giles.
Was it Giles?
Moore flicked it on, and Giles took it in his stride. Yes, Ryan Giles, he's on loan from Wolves. He'd been on loan at Coventry and, Shrewsbury, Coventry and Rotherham before. Very useful player on the right, left foot.
There we go. But Les, that was a great tackle from Baker, wasn't it? Yeah, without touching the ball, he didn't bring the man down. He just got his body in there, didn't he?
Oh, me or Ian? Who are you speaking
Les,
to?
Les, sorry, man. Les.
Yeah. I mean, it was. He showed good pace, actually, to get back. Baker's not renowned for being that quick. If the Cardiff player goes down, they're going to scream for a penalty. I don't think it was a foul. But he hasn't got any of the ball. He's just put him under enough pressure with Bentley coming out as well to really enable us to stop the space and stop him getting his shot away. But it was poor defending by Atkinson. He lost his positional sense again. He got dragged to a ball that he was never going to win and ended up in no man's land. But Baker did very, very well. And Bentley did well as well. And it was a warning shot, really. But other than that, really, in the, you know.
Well, I know we got the
20 minutes.
We got the opening goal. Let's talk to each of you about the goal. So I'll stick with you, Les, on the goal. 21 minutes, Callas to Viner. Great pass, and Flint was left.
That's Massengo. It was Massengo to Viner.
Was it? There you go. You see, look, yeah. I'm somebody criticised me the other day saying I'm shit with ages. I can't even identify the players now.
Sorry.
But it was a good ball by Viner to Wyman, wasn't it, Les? Yeah, and a great finish.
It was, but let's be honest, if Bristol City can see that goal, we're going to be absolutely furious about the quality of defending, because but Flint's gotten ball watching and Wyman's made a great run. Flint is obviously slow, but the touch that Wyman had wasn't a particularly good one, and the keeper's come out and then just stopped. If he follows his run to get the ball, he'll get there before Wyman every day of the week. So it was poor defending from Flint to let his man go, and then it was poor goalkeeping. It was a good finish, but, you know, we need to be fair to Viner and say it was a good ball as well, but it wasn't good defending and we took advantage of that.
Definitely. Ian, your view on the goal after my sort of getting it all wrong. I was trying to be clever with the pass before the pass, so I've been corrected, it's Masengo. But, Flint in the Alice hairband, he seemed up for the game, but he was sort of just shown a clean pair of heels by Vyman, wasn't he?
Well, you always will, because if you're up against Flint and Morrison, what you don't do, and we still did it far too much, while we're all patting ourselves on the back, we still did it far too much, is play the ball forward in the air, because that's exactly where he wants it. What you've got to do is get Vyman away from him, Martin away from him, and get them on the half turn and return facing goal. And every time we did that, they had problems. So you had the ball from Masengo, sensible, back to Viner. Viner had a look up, played a nice soft, just lumpy, played a nice soft pass in, and it went in behind Flynn. And it was a great finish by Vyman, but like I said earlier on, it's all about service. It's all about putting strikers up front is great, but you've got to have the people that can give them the service. And in the same way, the second goal, what a lovely
look. Well, we'll come on to that in
and brilliant cross from Antoine Semenya, bypassed the entire car. Yeah. And Vyman's had a good sense to pull away the back stick and come in and catch it on the volley. I thought it was
Well, go through that second goal in a minute, because Mark,
Dave, I don't know if your mic, Dave.
Hello, is that better?
Your microphone keeps going in and out.
Hello, that's better, isn't it? Yeah, I think that's probably better.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
Do I get my view on the goal?
I'm going to go on. You give your view on the goal, Mark, and Ian's already given us his view on the second one. But Mark, how did you see that first?
Well, I watched it a few times just before we came on air, and the thing is, Viner plays the ball, and Vyman goes to touch it. It almost skids underneath his foot. So Flint's going to make the challenge, and that sort of waving at the ball does him completely. And Phillips just waits. Saw the view from behind the goal. He can't make up his mind, waits to come forward, and by then it's too late. Vyman's past Flint, and he's got all the right, the other side of the goal, and he just flicks it across him. So he just did him. But letting the ball run under his foot, are not intentionally, because he completely misses the first ball, and then he just flicked it into the corner. It's a great finish.
No, it was.
He got a bit of luck.
Yeah, he did. But that's what you need sometimes. Les, back heel off the line by King, champagne moment. That looked a goal all the way. If he hadn't flicked that away like he did, that was 1-1 going into the break, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it was unbelievable defending. Not just because he got there, but because of the flick. If he's just blocked it with his body on the line, there's two Cardiff players inside the 6-yard box who are just going to tap it into an empty net. So for him to not just block it, but also get it out of that danger zone, showed real experience, quality, and it was a big, big moment, because if they equalise after 30 minutes, we really are going to be on the back foot.
Yeah.
It was really, really good defending, not just to get into position, but also to clear the ball outside of harm's way as well.
No, that was good. And then Dan Bentley, he did two good saves after that. One he touched away around the post, another one he got down low. So, City could have gone in half-time square, but they kept their lead, wasn't it? That was good. A couple of good saves by Bentz in goal.
Well, yeah, but they're saves you expect him to make. If he doesn't save them, then questions are going to be asked of him. They may look flashy, but, that's his job. You expect him to save those, in my opinion.
Yeah. Ian, City started, Bristol City, that is. Well, it was only one City. Started the second half, and Cardiff enjoyed, I'll say, a good spell. The goal, when it came, was after a little bit of pressure. It was a messy one, wasn't it? Yeah, it was more getting on the end of something, and Baker trying to clear it just blasted it into Bentley's back. So Bentley got credited with the own goal, but it was a scrappy one to concede, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a really poor goal. If you deconstruct it, it started when the ball went to Pack. Pack is 10 yards outside the penalty area. Can whoever shuffling that paper and slamming doors stop doing it? Because it's been doing it for 5 minutes now, and it's a right nose. Yeah, Pack's in about 10 yards of space. Nobody around him, 10 yards out from goal. Nice little no-look pass, but boy, he didn't have to have some time to do it. And Kiefer Moore's made a run and no one's tracked him inside our box. It was very similar to the Blackpool goal. Very similar. So that's something we need to look at. The cross, I don't blame Dan Bentley at all. The Callas didn't, because he didn't track the run, he didn't get close enough. The ball deflects off him. It goes quite quickly. It goes under Bentley. And then Baker does clear it off the line, in fairness to him. But unfortunately, he doesn't get enough height on it. And it smacks Bentley and goes in the net. But in fairness, the Andy King back heel off the line we'd had earlier. So I suppose,
you win some, you lose some. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly.
Red Robin on here said it took a deflection, but he says you point a small finger at Bentley in that respect. I mean, Mark, their equalising goal, Ian said it was a bit like the one we conceded against Blackpool. I thought as well that, as somebody pointed out, I think it was on Twitter this afternoon, that again, it came through a gap between the right side, well, between the fullback and the right of the central defensive two. A bit like the goal we conceded against Middlesbrough to some extent, where the midfielder has time and space to pick his spot. Did you see it like that?
Yeah, and it was just a huge gap there. And I also saw sort of James and King being isolated again. We were just caught very, very flat. The concentration was poor. And I thought more shot first of all, but he didn't. All he's doing is looking to get the ball in the six-yard box. Callas comes out and tries to make up for his mistake, but deflects it, and it squirms under Bentley, and there's just no room for the clearance that just goes straight into his back. But I mean, considering that Cardiff just punt lots of crosses into the box, that is our weak point. A flat ball between the fullback and the centre back. Same happened against Reading, I think. We know where they had the overload for the goal by the forward whose name I forgot. That went left to right, where he hit it in the opposite corner. And at Middlesbrough, where they had those two crosses, that's our weak point. Gaps, between the right back and the centre back is where we're getting caught. Yeah. So we've got to do something about that.
But as you said earlier, Les, City aren't one to just sit back and try and contain, which would have been very difficult against these guys because the aerial bombardment didn't come. And then the goal that proved to be the winner. It was class, in my view. I mean, Masengo picked up the ball, moved one way, but then did a purposeful back heel. And then Semenyo, who I criticised last week for not being able to cross a ball, he crossed it up, and a fantastic finish by Vyman, wasn't it? But just the whole build-up to that goal was good, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think Pearson deserves credit for getting Semenyo on. I mean, I thought he was absolutely dreadful last week, but he did more within a couple of minutes by running at the Cardiff defence than he did in the entirety of the time he came on against Swansea. And Masengo's done a neat back heel. Semenyo usually kind of drills it in low. Has played a really nice lofted pass. The defender's got caught underneath the ball. It was poor defending. And Vyman, who usually in this position, smashes it into the crowd or over the stand, has just absolutely nailed it, and the keeper hasn't got a chance. I mean, Vyman doesn't tend to score many goals like that. He's usually quite instinctive, but he had time to think about it. And we saw against Blackpool in the first half, he's 6 yards out and he's absolutely launched it over the bar. So I was, for him to get his head over the ball and connect with it so smoothly and not give the keeper a chance.
No, it was class.
I think it just shows the confidence he's got. Do you know what I mean? It was huge. A huge goal for us because we've been playing well this season without getting the points that I think we deserved. So,
well, we come on to that with Pearson's comments because he talked about the individual games. I mean, Mark, I'll be honest. I said before Vyman's first goal, I think he'd done something, just hit it forward aimlessly. I said, God, what a waste of space here. So I've got to eat huge, huge amounts of humble pie. And here's a guy who's got four goals already. And I seem to think 18-19 season, he started with four. I think he got a couple at Swansea once and then didn't score that many. He's never had a season in his career where he scored more than, I'll probably get this wrong as well, more than 12. But he's on fire at the moment, isn't he? But the goal was cracking.
Yeah, because he got his knee over the ball, and the ball's coming over the top of the defence. So he hits it on the half volley, on the full. That's not easy, not an easy technique. So he gets everything right. It's a beautiful finish, and Vyman gets lots of chances. I think where we get disgruntled is that, I mean, when he doesn't hit the target, when he's well placed, and it certainly happened against Blackpool. Happen against Swansea, he can blaze the ball, but you know, he just showed so much control today, and he's capable of that. He did that against Sheffield United when he got that hat trick up at Bramall Lane. He can score some great goals, and he just runs and runs. And when you're playing somebody like a false number nine like Chris Martin, he's going to get a lot of bruises because he's playing with his back to goal. You've got an ideal partner in Vyman who will. You know, he will play across the front line and he will find space and he will get chances. And today he buried them, absolutely buried them. We didn't waste our chances. We had 5 shots on target from 9 attempts. Pretty good. It's not fantastic football, but the performances are really reflecting, you know, the points. We probably deserve 3 more points than we got at this stage.
Yeah, so I'm very happy. Comment. That's fair comment. Hey, Ian, you talked us through the goal a few moments ago, but look, let's look at the closing stages of the game. They didn't really get a look in, did they? And I was concerned. I tweeted that, oh my God, they brought Jada Silva on to cope with the aerial bombardment. It never really came. And for once, De Silva did show more on the offensive side, but City didn't look in any major danger in that final 20 minutes, did they?
Well, I don't know. I don't know about not looking any major danger. I think they saw the game out quite well, which is something in the past that we've been very guilty of not doing. Blackpool.
It was less 11th hour than Reading away, wasn't it? Because we were panicking then, but you know, we seem to have a measure of Cardiff today. I thought.
Well, it was less Rourke's drift than it normally is. I still want to know. I want Mark. Don't just. Send me a text or something, Martin. Tell me how you hit the ball on the full and call it a half volley. Don't answer now, but just send me a text on it because I don't get that. But I mean, someone said on here, Red Robin, I think game management was good today. And it was. It was. It wasn't fabulous because we should have kept the ball even better than we did because we didn't have a great deal of possession. And that's something that if you want me to develop it now, I'll develop it now. If you want me to develop it later, I will.
Okay, right.
Well, in terms of possession, we've won 2 out of 3 away games.
Yeah.
Okay, so today we had 38% possession.
38.
Reading, we had 33% possession. Okay, those are the two games we've won. Guess what our possession was against Borough?
58, I think, wasn't it?
50-something.
I'll tell you, 62.
Yeah.
And I think that tells you something about our team, and it could point to why our away form has been better than our home form for a while. And that's
about 3 years.
yeah, it has. And people say, well, why is that? What's the matter with Ashton again? If you have more of the ball, we're less of a threat. And that sounds odd, but the trouble is, if we have more of the ball, we go for this recycling thing, you know, backwards, sideways, forward, sideways, pass it back again, and everybody's half asleep. And when sides come onto us, we seem to be more effective on the break. So I think that's something that the analysts at Bristol City really should get their heads around, and perhaps we need to play differently at home than we have been doing. It's just a thought. I'm not saying I've got the answer, but it's certainly food for thought. When you think you win 2 out of 3 away from home over a season, that would give you 46 points.
Yeah.
You only need another 30 at home and you're in the playoffs. So
yeah.
I'd love to see some real, you know, by an analysis expert, and I don't claim to be one of those, but I do notice trends. And if you look at that, and I don't think, in fairness, before the start of the season that any of us would have had Reading and Cardiff down as banker away
our
wins.
As our two away wins. And we've ended up with what we thought, I think, pretty much was acceptable level of points after the first five games. You know, if we'd have lost today, it's a shitty start to the season, and we won, and it's made up maybe for the disappointment of the Blackpool home, Swansea home games, and Middlesbrough. I mean, Pearson said after the match he felt every game, perhaps bar the Middlesbrough game, although he said even in that one, at 1-1, we had a chance. But, you know, we could be 3 points better off. And hey, it's then 2 points a game from the opening five. Les, Ian's talked about the home form and fundamental need to change. I mean, it is 3.5 years, longer than that, that we are, you know, and this is under three different managers now, that the away form is better. What's wrong with Ashton Gate? Why aren't we so good in front of our own fans?
To be blunt and honest, we don't have the creativity to break teams down. When teams come up against us, we can play on the break and we got runners. You need more than runners at home. If you look at Weimann, his best performances for us have been away from home. I can't remember a game at home where he has had a significant impact on a game. There will have been games where he has, but I can't remember them. If you look at his away form, he had a hat-trick at Sheffield United. His constant running, his pressing makes such a big difference against teams who want to come out and play. Mm. I think at home, we need the likes of Palmer, we need the likes of Wells, we need more of an attacking threat. Martin by himself against a team who are going to stick six men behind the ball isn't going to work. And I think a lot of teams are struggling with this. It's not just us. Teams like to sit in and then play on the break. And we, along with others, haven't come up with a way to break those teams down. And I think this season is going to be, you know, at Ashton Gate, it could be quite a long, challenging watch. Because we don't have that ability to break teams down. And it's not going to be easy when you've got Martin up front by himself.
Well, the only one that we've probably got who has got that ability, and I think, you could argue Casey Palmer should be that person, but then it's young Alex Scott, and congratulations to him on getting called up to the under-19s or what have you. But Mark, I mean, that creativity, where do you accommodate it in that side? Because, you know, that side that started the game, yeah, it's that's the way we if we play like that every week, we ain't going to be any threat of relegation. You know, we'd be lower mid-table. But how do you fit the creativity into that side? Who makes way, in your mind, for that creativity, looking at that team that performed exceptionally well today?
You don't necessarily have to do that. What you can do is bring your fullbacks into the game more so they get ahead of the ball and provide you with some width. So, you know, they are able to break the lines. That's what we don't do. We don't really have a lot of pace. You couldn't say that Danny Simpson or Zach Viner are going to provide that on the right. Jay Silva really hasn't shown that, but Cameron Pring could. I mean, if you've got somebody like Matty James who can pass the ball, he can certainly pass the ball, but somebody's got to be running ahead of the ball. And that's what we just haven't done that. No. And like you said, you go back to the 17-18 season when we won 11 games. That was the season where we threatened to get in the playoffs until after Christmas. And we had Bobby Reid and Joe Bryan and Aidan Flint who all went off at the end of that season. And then since then, it's been 8-7-7 home wins. Absolutely abysmal.
That is
so we've got to turn that around. But it's the ability to get players ahead, you know, ahead of the ball, you know, even defenders who can be auxiliary midfielders like Rob Atkinson. It's something needs to happen, because at the moment we're a little bit safe. You're probably only say we're a, you know, we're a mid-table team. You know, this team,
but that's based on last season. That's an improvement, isn't it?
It's a fantastic improvement, but you know, I don't think we will threaten the top sides unless we offer something from the flanks or something in midfield. You could see Massengo improving his game, I think, you know, from winning those tackles, playing the ball forward. He could, you know, if he could shoot, he gets into some good positions today. He just curled the ball around the post. He might even get an assist soon, but he does some fantastic work. You know, being like the water carrier in midfield, making tackles, keeping us going forward and making the simple pass. But yeah, it's just the ability to threaten at home, because we still really haven't done that enough yet. That's what we need to do.
Well, not for a long while. Ian, I mean, Sick Note Williams was doing a reasonable job in the commentary box today. O'Dowda is, is Sose going to be fit after the international break? Are either of those likely to start or be accommodated to bring what Mark and Les say is lacking against Preston a fortnight today? You know, do they? What would they add to what's already there?
O'Dowda is a more naturally attacking player than Cam Pring. So if you were going to play a 4-4-2, he could play, Pring goes to left back and O'Dowda goes on the wing. What I'd do is keep exactly the same team. It would definitely be a 3-5-2 at home. And I'd have O'Dowda and Williams Pring on the bench.
Okay. Yeah, O'Dowda and Williams.
No.
O'Dowda and Williams on the bench. Yeah, you wouldn't bring them in.
Yeah, I'd hope that everybody's fit because Cundy must be close because otherwise I don't think Nigel Pearson, as much as he doesn't rate Taylor Moore and he threw him under the bus again tonight.
Did he?
I don't think...
What did he
say? Well, in his after-match comments, but he's gone on loan because he's not going to get any game... He's not going to get much game time here. So, I mean, that's right. More or less. And whether whether it turns into a permanent, he also said, and the reporter didn't even ask him if it was any chance it could turn into a perm. So that, for me, is... I don't think it wasn't terrible, but, I mean, he did throw the kid under the bus after the Forest Green game when they said, yeah. Oh, Thomas Callas played well. And obviously, you know, in there with him, Taylor Moore. No, Thomas Callas played well.
Yeah. So he's got the ick. He's got the ick about Taylor Moore.
You'd hope that Cundy is going to be fit after the international break because, like Semenyo, he had an op. And I've seen him doing rehab and one thing and another. I don't know if he's in full training yet, but I hope he's available because if you're going to play with three centre-backs, whether one of them's a left-back, because we've done it before. I mean, Lee Johnson did it when he had a back four that were all centre-backs. You remember that one? He had Bailey Wright at right-back,
Magnussen at left, and then,
And Baker and Callas in the middle. Callas and Webster. Callas and Webster in the middle.
Various combinations. So, yeah.
You know, there's various combinations, but it's been done before and it worked quite well. So I hope Cundy's fit because obviously if Callas goes well on international duty and comes back with a two-weeker or something like that and he's going to be out, you need a right-sided centre-back. I know he's got the option of moving Zach in one, but you've got to make your mind up about him. And I think...
Yeah,
in the long term,
and Cundy's going to need.
Zach Viner becoming. I think he's a really useful sub because he can play three different positions, or he has played three different.
Correct. I think that's the thing with Zach, isn't it? He's that utility player rather than being the nailed-on specialist in right back, right centre, or midfield. Yeah, no, that makes total sense. That does. Les, let me come back to you just to wrap up on the game, and I'll ask each of you this. You know, man of the match, excluding Vyman, who getting two goals, with the natural man of the match. If you had to pick a star performer from the remainder of the team out there today, who would yours be?
I think it's very, very difficult to say because if you look at player ratings, I think we've got a stack of players who are. At eight, I thought Masengo and James were excellent in the middle. I thought Martin, again, with very little support from the ref, made a big difference to getting us up the pitch. So I don't think there was a standout player. I thought Baker did very well. I thought Pring, you know, we say he's a defensively minded player, but he does get up the pitch and he gets some good balls in and he's good on the ball. I think he's been a massive success over the last few weeks. So I would be leaning towards Pring, actually.
Okay.
But I don't think there was a standout player alongside Vyman. I thought it was a real team effort. And I think that's what we want. And it's something we haven't seen for a long time.
For a long, long time. Yeah. Mark, who would your... Would you agree with Les that, Vyman's going to get the star, but if you had to pick one other, or would you say there's probably four or five that would get an eight? or would you pick one individual?
Yeah, I'd say Massengo, because he could have failed miserably on the right hand side. I think we saw him the right last season against Luton, and he was awful. I think he just come back into the side and he just looked completely out of his depth. But today he was able to play that fairly well defensively, and then came into the middle at the end of the game when Andy King went off and did that equally well. Great back heel for the Semenyo assist. A nice neat pass to Viner, and also had a shot as well.
He almost curled one in, didn't he? That would have been a stunning goal had it gone in. Yeah, no, I remember that.
I think he's demonstrating, we know he's got lots of promise, but that's easy to say about lots of players. But he's a player, like I said earlier, that most people would have had going out the door. We just didn't see a place for him in the side. He's been given a chance under Nigel Pearson, and I think he's one of the first players on the team sheet at the moment. But every player's got to work their backside off under Pearson to keep the shirt. And I think that's really bodes well for City, because the work rate is terrific.
No, that's something that's been lacking. Ian, for you, was there another star other than the obvious Vyman for his two goals?
I agree with what everyone's said so far about it being a team effort. I think Bentley had a good game, because he was definitely the busier of the two goalkeepers.
Yeah.
I thought Massengo, I don't know if you can remember, Dave, you've been watching City as long as I have. I don't think I've ever seen a fitter player at our club, because the kid's running as hard in the 95th minute as he is in the first.
Yeah,
and I think, and bear in mind, he's in a position where he's had to do a lot of running. I don't think he's the finished article yet. He needs to add goals and assists to his game to become the finished article. I'm not talking about dozens. I'm talking about three or four.
Well, if you got five goals a season and five assists in this next 41 games to go, if it was five and five, you'd say improvement. Yeah. And he'd probably get snapped up next summer by one of the big boys, wouldn't he? Or a Prem team, if he was that visible.
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a blend in midfield. You don't all have to create and score, but it's well documented. And, we scored two today. We got three at Reading. But in our home games, what we've done, drew 1-1 with Blackpool and lost 1-0 to Swansea. Mm. Is that that's the two home games?
That's it. That's so right.
We haven't got lots of goals in us at the moment. And Wells doesn't look like he's going to get in the team unless someone gets injured. Casey Palmer is the same. I was looking and thinking, well, who's going to replace Chris Martin if he's unavailable? And I can't see a natural come in without looking down in the under-23s. And
the with Louis Britton being the only one. He's the only one.
There's no likely replacement for that. There. None.
No, and this is why I think we'll probably come on to the transfer window. I think the one player we do definitely need is a striker to replace Pham. Because I think Wells is staying. There have been various rumours going around about fees agreed with Preston and Birmingham, but from what Pearson was saying, unless he's in the dark, and I don't think he would be, my only fear is that we get a big bid, an acceptable bid on transfer deadline day, because I honestly think Steve Lansdowne would accept it.
For
anybody. Who? You know,
for anybody.
Let's say Brighton come in and said, right, okay, 15 million for Thomas Kalas, or somebody came in with 3 million, 4 million for Naki Wells. It's all right, people say, well, I'd bite their arm off. But you haven't got any time to replace them. So unless you're really confident, bear in mind, if you look at availability, we had 20 first team players available today and 19 under 23 players available. And in those under 23 players, I'm including Conway, Bell, Britton, Pearson, Riley Towler, lots of players who've actually got some first team experience. So we've got enough players that the issue is quality and readiness.
I'm laughing because Red Robin's put on there. We come on to transfer window now, the closure of which is rapidly approaching. Red Robin's put on there, 4 million for Wells. Who's a scout? Stevie Wonder, maybe. I don't know.
Well, Red Robin, Stevie must have been our scout because we paid 5.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Very true. Les,
one of our football experts said we'd pay 5 million quid for him, and it was funded out of the Josh Brownier deal. So I wouldn't be. He's a goal scorer in the Championship. He's just not at the right club at the moment. Sorry, and all that.
Yeah. Les, the transfer window slams shut on Tuesday, isn't it? Yeah. Pearson's being very cagey. Well, he's saying doesn't envisage any incomings or outgoings. Muttered something about loans. I mean, do you see anything happening in the next 72 hours or so, or have we got what we got and that's it, and it's not that bad after all?
No, I think we've got what we've got. I'm not in the know, but I don't hear any rumours or nothing that seems to be popping up saying anything's imminent. So, but I think Pearson's played a bit of a masterstroke there, because people and fans have been crying out to get players in. But look at what he's done over a short period of time with the players that he's got. They've made huge steps forward. And if we get more players in, that might make that transition slightly more difficult. I think we need a striker. I don't think Chris Martin can play 46 games a season. I don't think he can play twice in a week. And we haven't got a like-for-like other than an unproven player from the youth setup. So I would like us to go for a target man, a bit like a Michael Smith at Rotherham, but that seems to be dead in the water. I think that's what we need if worst comes to worst. And is there a loan window, or does a loan shut at the same time as transfer?
I don't know.
Shuts at the same time.
Shuts, so you can't do any of that now. It's interesting you say about... Interesting you say you go about going for the target man, because we were being linked with an Accrington Stanley player, I think it was this week, or was it might have been Fleetwood, who was a quote in the Jamie Vardy mold. Well, in a sort of roundabout way, Vyman's that nippy striker, and if we bring in another in the Jamie Vardy mode, it's not a backup for Martin. That makes Naki Wells' position even more questionable, doesn't it? If you bring in that
we just don't know if it's true or not.
No.
You know what I mean? Because didn't the chairman come out and say, well, this is complete news to me?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time people get their rumours from Gregor, and Gregor McGregor makes up as he goes along. He hasn't got a clue what's going on. And he gets all his, he gets all his information from the forum. Do you know what I mean? And other people on there make things up as they go along as well. So it's just...
No. Les, I thought it was all true.
I have complete trust in Pearson and what Pearson wants. Is he going to want a Vardy-like striker? He probably will, but he's made it very clear this is a 3-year project. This is the first transfer window, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Martin ain't got that much time left in him, maybe a year or two. So maybe that's something that will happen over time.
Yeah.
Can't see it just transitioning in this window. Will we get anyone in? Maybe we'll get a loan in. I don't know. But Pearson seems very, very happy with what he's got. And to be fair, I think he's doing a very good job so far this season with the tools at his disposal. Usually most transfer windows, if at this point I'm saying, we need two people in, let's get some players in. But I trust Pearson and what he's done so far, so I'll go with whatever he thinks is best.
Yeah. Mark, do you think anybody's going to be coming or going? I mean, do you think what's more likely, outgoings or... incomings, if you had to
incomings, although the market is so slow. I mean, I'm just off the top of my head thought of somebody who might be available. I don't know if he's a right player for Bristol City. His wages would be high. They definitely have to be subsidised. But West Brom have just brought in Jordan Hugill from Norwich on loan, which makes Kenneth Sahor's position really untenable there. I think his first appearance of the season was in their Carabao Cup thrashing against Arsenal the other night. So he's out of the picture. Don't know if he'd be right. It's probably on high wages. Could get subsidised. But otherwise, it's probably take a chance on a Premier League player, somebody who might be available. But I don't know. It's just pure supposition.
I'll be honest, Mark. You say Kenneth Zahore, and I read a bit about him in Neil Warnock's book, My Kind of Club. Good book, if anybody's not read it, all about his time in charge at Cardiff City. And Zahore, I think, Well, personally, just reading what he says about him in there, nothing massively scathing, but I would sooner see Louis Britton come in if you're looking for that sort of dominance rather than sort of shelling out the sort of wages that he would want. I mean, Ian, I'll ask you the same question. Incomings more likely than outgoings or vice versa?
I think the only chance of what I'll call a major outgoing, we may see another under 23 player go out on loan. But my fear is what I said earlier on about, you know, us getting a big bid on deadline day or close to deadline day. And I think it's more likely to be a loan, because Pearson said, well, you know, we might do a couple of loans. Players have gone out on loan, and that's, particularly with Taylor Moore going out, that's cleared a few bob in the budget for wages.
And Nash. And Nash as well. Yep.
And Nash. I mean, Nash was a big earner. So, you know, Nash and Taylor Moore going out is probably cleared 600,000 in wages. Yep. So that would subsidise a loan. I think you're right. I mean, Zahora's never really been desperately impressive. He is a big bloke. And I think we need that type of thing. Like you, I'd rather see Louis Britton get a chance. He seems to be the least in favour of the young strikers. You hear Pearson talk about Zach Bell, Tommy Conway, and he doesn't often mention Louis Britton, and he was the last one to come into the team. So I don't know if that's something to do with the fact that the others have all signed longer term.
And I was going to say, is it about the contract situation? And, yeah.
Well, I don't know is the honest answer. When he was linked to a move about 6 months ago, his dad came on Twitter and said there's nothing in it. So I don't know, but I would think that type of player, we do need somebody. I mean, I looked at it, I thought, well, could Casey Palmer, who's a little bit taller, could he go up front, because he's you know, got a decent touch, he's quite strong, he's quite quick, can he play back to goal? Don't know. But he's not really that player, and he's
that's
not.
That's an interesting suggestion there, because, you know, in midfield he gives the ball away in silly positions sometimes, but he's quite a unit, isn't he, Casey? And that is an interesting.
That's what I thought until I looked on Wiki and on the various other things, and I don't want to get onto the subject of height and upset people. But he's. I thought Casey Palmer was 6 foot plus. He's 5'8".
Is that right? Maybe it's that ponytail. Yeah,
he wears high heels.
Sticking up on the top.
According to what I can find on the internet. I mean, some of it you have to be very careful, because you do, if you Google two or three things. My other thing once it said Andy Vyman was 6'2", and I don't honestly think that.
Is Andy Vyman 6'2"?
No, he's not. But no. I don't honestly think he is. I mean, you're telling me he's the same height as Nathan Baker. No, I'm not having it. But no. Yeah, that's what I found about Casey Palmer. I mean, fair play. If someone actually knows what his height is and all the rest of it, and he's over 6 foot, because I thought he's, barring injuries, he's probably not going to get in the team ahead of Alex Scott regularly in midfield, because they're both what I call tens. So, you know, is that an option?
Yeah. Do you think somebody might come in for? Do you think somebody might come in for Callum O'Dowda?
What, to give him a lift home?
Well, I don't know. You know, people.
Stranger things have happened.
If you had a look at the effect the Cardiff lad with a good left foot, whose name I forgot,
Giles.
Mark would tell me. Giles. If you look at the effect he had on the game. But like I say, Callum's got to get more goals, more assists, and he's got to become a goal scorer or a great goal scorer, as opposed to a scorer of great goals, because some of the goals he's got are absolutely out of this world.
They're worldies. No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, they are worldies, but he doesn't get enough of them. But I like O'Dowd as a player if he's playing left wing. Let's get the bloke in his right position. And he was unlucky against Blackpool to get kicked in the shin early on, and he's been out a bit longer than I thought he would be. But yeah, hopefully after the for the next game, Nigel Pearson will actually have a fully fit senior squad to select from, and that's the first fully fit squad we'll have had in probably a year.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. Guy, I put a little thread on OTIB the other day, actually, and I was reading the Pearson press conference news, and there was one sentence I picked up on it. I'm not a believer in collecting players, and I put that on yesterday morning at 10 o'clock, and just under 4,000 views and 120 replies. It's down on page 2 on the forum now. I mean, Les, we were into collecting players for pretty much the whole time that Lee Johnson and Mark Ashton were here. Do you think that was a subtle little dig at what had gone on before and why he won't bring players in just for the sake of it?
I don't know if it's a dig. I think it might just be what he truly believes in. And I think already this season we're seeing a big improvement in the quality of the football that we're playing. Maybe it's much easier to make those quick changes in both mentality and shape and tactics when you've got a much smaller group to work with. And, you know, I get the impression, they haven't said this, but maybe one or two of the players who are going out the door at the end of the season, end of last season, didn't perhaps have the right attitude or the attitude needed to get yourself out of a relegation battle. And I think he may have seen that and said, you know what, let's work with a much smaller, much more tight-knit group. Look at a club like Leeds. Leeds don't have a big squad. They, you know, Bielsa likes to have a very small number of players and he'll play them out of position, but he wants that same group of that tight-knit squad. So I've got no issue with what Pearson's doing. It seems sensible. We always want to see new players coming in. It excites us. We get to see new players in the City shirt. But in Pearson, I trust, and I think he's doing a very good job with the players he's got, and he's making them better. And Downing and Fleming, whoever's doing the work on the training pitch, they deserve a lot of credit. Yes, we've only got 7 points. Well, only 7 points is a good, solid return. But the transformation in the way that we're playing is...
Oh, it's immense.
It's huge. But also, with O'Dowda, going back to him, I think Pring has done a very, very good job on that left-hand side. And I would be very surprised if O'Dowda comes straight back in and replaces him. Because the one thing Pring has got, he's stronger than O'Dowda and he can cross a ball as well, which I'm not convinced O'Dowda particularly good at his delivery. So he's making players better. Players are getting better, and I'm not convinced that a bigger squad's necessarily needed.
Yeah, Mark, it was noticeable today that Pearson was down on the touchline with Curtis Fleming alongside him. No sign of Downing. I'm guessing he was maybe up in the box, and Pearson sort of maybe felt he is better in the theatre of being on the technical area. That's what he said at the Senior Reds a couple of weeks ago. But was that, you know, was it? Do you think Downing was in the box? Because he was nowhere near the touchline, was he? You know, and he couldn't have been scouting anybody, or unless he was looking at a player or something like that. But do you think they swapped around today?
I mean, I couldn't really be bothered. I was more interested that Nigel Pearson was there. But, I mean, Nigel said he wants players to make their own decisions on the pitch. And we've seen them do that in the main, which is great. And, you know, he's put to trust in young players like Alex Scott and Cameron Pring, and last year with Ryan Towler and with Louis Britton coming on. And they haven't disappointed. Those players, they give everything for him. They really are a reflection of the manager, the grit and determination that we want, because we're just fed up of players just drifting along, not tracking back. This season, there ain't been any passengers. None at all. And that's what we want to see.
100% right.
Yeah, and we will earn the points. Last season, some of the performances didn't deserve the wins. It's not that this season. City will earn the right to play, and they'll make chances, and they'll defend as a unit, and we will earn the points. And I think we'll finish halfway or above, and we'll be well on the road to that, you know, starting that three-year project. I've got no doubt. So I'm really, really pleased.
Yeah. Except we're positive. Ian, final question for you, and I'm just reading a thread off of OTIB now. Bristol City, the Pearson era. Could this be the result and performance that go on to define our season? It has arrived. Best football I've seen in a good few years now, said Marco. The Red just need to fix the home form. I mean, do you think we are seeing now, and with two home games to come, you know, wouldn't it be great if we could get it right at Ashton Gate? But do you think we're seeing the Nigel Pearson era on what he is about and the way he is taking the club forward?
Well, if if I could just, because there's a few questions in there, if I could just deconstruct that a little bit. There's five games gone, and I'm not going to get carried away, because don't forget, we won for four on the spin at the start of last season. Look how that turned out. So let's put loads of caveats in. One, we need to stay fit and injury-free, particularly, as Les pointed out, we've got a small first-team squad. But we have got a lot of players if you throw in the under-23s. Now, is it the Pearson era? And I don't think so, not yet. I think we need to be careful. Probably ask me after the next two home games, because if we won both of those games and we maintain that for the rest of the season, and that's massive ifs, but if we did, we'd finish up with 85 points. In some years, that's been enough to take you up automatically. Yeah. So I'm saying very pleased, but don't get carried away. And we do need to strengthen our squad with the addition of another striker, whether it's a loan, a perm, or whatever. And I had a look at the guy, Accrington Stanley. I know it's in the at the lower level, but he's got some goal scoring record. He's better than a goal a game. So,
yeah. Well, let's wait and see.
Looking for a Jamie Vardy type guy. I mean, bearing in mind that Leicester signed Vardy from Fleetwood for £1 million. If he's looking for that type, then that type's not Chris Martin. So, I think what you need is a replacement for Chris Martin. Not by saying replacement, I mean when he's unavailable. He's 32. He's not going to play 46 games this season.
No.
And you don't want to totally disrupt the way you play because you've got to put a different player up front. You've got to put Vyman up front.
Yeah. You can have a plan B. And personally, shelling out wages on somebody that is not necessarily going to be transformational, but, having Louis Britton, maybe make do and mend with him until January if Chris doesn't play. Because, as you say, two home games coming up, Preston and Luton, it is, I think, in that order. What you're saying is that Martin is not necessarily going to start both of those. Or why not play him in one and then have Britton start the next one and then bring Martin on if he's just not measuring up? Martin an impact sub.
Well, you pay, or play Martin for 60 minutes or 70 minutes in both and give him 20 minutes, 25, 30 minutes, including injury time.
And that's better than bringing in a body, well, isn't it, for the sake of it?
It is, but my concern seems to be that is Britton in Nigel Pearson's plans? That's my concern. If he is, fabulous, because I totally agree that he's the guy you bring in. I don't think it'd be fair to bring in Naki and play like we are with the... We do play too many long balls still to Chris Martin. And Naki's not... you imagine him up against Aidan Flynn. If you're not... It's fair enough if you're playing little through balls and balls down the channel like the one that Vyman scored for. Yeah, do that. Yeah. But, he's not going to... stick him up front against Flynn and Morrison and play like we did at times. And it just isn't going to come off.
Yeah. No. Guys, we've come to the end of our episode before the international break. While the international break's going on, I'll do a little one-on-one with Dave Fevs, just seeing how he's viewed the first five games. Again, thanks to everybody who's been listening today, which is really good. And if you aren't already following us on Twitter, please do. We're up to 476. Give us another 24 followers, and we'll have the same number of followers as ISIS K reading that on the news. I can't believe that 500 people can determine the fate of a country. And those two home games, I think afterwards, Ian, they come up with it's QPR away, Millwall away, Fulham at home. So yeah, we need to win those two home games. But I see little Lee Johnson's got Sunderland at the top of the table. So whether their fans will be getting the same disappointment in the second half, we remain to see. And I did have a little chuckle because I saw Ipswich 2-0 up against the mighty AFC Wimbledon, and they're still looking for their first win of the season because they got pegged back to 2-2. But look, the final score in the lunchtime game at Cardiff, it was Cardiff City 1, Bristol City 2. 7 points from the first five games, not too bad. Ian, Mark and Les, thanks. And thanks to everybody who's listened. Enjoy the international break. And we'll speak to you all again very, very soon in one of these live broadcasts at this time, yep. Or maybe on a Sunday morning if it's a Saturday home game. But thanks a lot for God all bless, your contributions.
God bless.
All the best.
God bless
everyone.
All the best.
Bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.